Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Mind Love, episode 223. Today's episode is all about mastering the secret language of charismatic communication.
Our social skills are atrophying. I think we're forgetting those innate traits. And so if we have to cultivate them again and learn them more purposefully, they are gifts to everyone. They are gifts to your children and your clients and your partners. If you want people to look forward to phone calls with you, if you want people to feel charged after being with you, talking to you, hanging out with you, reading your email, the way that we do that is we're gifting them these cues that trigger something super positive inside of them. When you gift people that you're listening on multiple levels, it is heard. It's so much louder.
Turn up your frequency with Mind Love. Bite-sized brain hacks for seekers, dreamers, and doers. It's time to give your mind a little love with your host, Melissa Monti.
It's a new day, a new episode, and a new opportunity to subscribe to the podcast. If you're listening for the first time, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you always know about new episodes. Plus, it makes you one of my favorite people. Because the more subscribers I have, the more I attract amazing guests to help better serve you. So don't forget to subscribe. Today, I would love to share a review from KTrio123, who says, "This podcast has become my therapy. In those hard days when something doesn't seem to click and you can't help but feel sad, anxious, bored, or with no purpose in life, listening to Melissa can give you a different mindset and see the light you need to keep on going. I hope you keep on bringing love to people around the world." Well, thank you so much, KTria. I will definitely do that. And I so appreciate you taking the time to leave this review. Somewhere in heaven, a podcast angel just got its mic. And now, on to the show. Have you ever watched someone at a party or in a meeting, at work, or I don't know, even at a coffee shop, and just felt that there was something magnetic about them? How does that person seem so confident, so effortless, so connected when I just feel so awkward? I remember back in high school, there was this girl that everyone seemed to love. She had loyal friends in every grade. She got invited to everything because people just loved having her around. She wasn't the thinnest in the room or the tallest. She didn't dress obviously better than anyone and didn't even really fit into that overall standard of beauty that seemed to be thrown in our faces at that time. You know, that early 2000s type beauty, the Britney, Christina, Jessica Simpson type look in the low-rise jeans. No, she was actually a little fluffy, which at the time I internalized as social suicide. Not to offend anyone, just keep in mind that at that time I had all the body image issues and I was only about a year or two away from a life-threatening eating disorder. But this girl, she had this huge contagious smile that would always beam when she'd pass me in the hall. I felt seen by her and heard by her in conversations. I was awed by her because she seemed to defy all these things that I thought were necessary to be as popular as she was. But somehow, she made all those dumb and kind of brutal social standards of high school just unimportant to anyone around her. Years earlier in middle school, back when I had acne and braces, bless my heart, my mom told me to just show confidence and people would be attracted to me and want to be my friend. This whole confidence thing always threw me for a loop because in some situations, I was ultra confident. I didn't mind raising my hand first or volunteering to go on stage in front of hundreds of people or make a joke in front of a crowd. But underneath, I had so many insecurities. I didn't feel pretty. I didn't love my body. I didn't do makeup particularly well. I came to school with my hair wet most days. And in groups of people that I thought were cooler than me, I think those worth issues were palpable. And sure, I think a lot of us had issues like that as a kid or as teenagers, but regardless of my insecurities, there was still something about that girl that could just own a room. She even beat out every typical hot cheerleader for homecoming queen. And I hear you, though. Melissa, that was high school. Get over it. I am over it, I promise. But the thing is, in every stage of my life, I've met people that seem to have that same ability. They just own the room. People trust them. People like them. People want to do business with them or be friends with them. And it's not just confidence. It's more than that. It's charisma. But what even is charisma? Is it like a cool connectedness? Is it social grace? Is it persuasion? And how can we be more charismatic if we're not even sure how to define it? Well, turns out, there's a lot we can do. There are cues that we can pick up on and put out to be that charismatic person that seems to just attract people and opportunities. And that's what we're talking about today. Our guest is Vanessa Van Edwards. She's the lead investigator at Science of People. She's a best-selling author of Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People, and more than 50 million people watch her engaging YouTube tutorials and TEDx talk. Her new and much-anticipated book, Cues, was just released March 1st, and man, it's good. So three key things we will learn are insights on how people work, surprising effects of eye contact, and when is too much, and the two traits that make up charisma and simple tweaks in behavior to lean into them. We're all here just trying to live our best lives, right? And while you're here listening to a podcast, you might feel like you're on the right track, but then you visit family, or you have a work deadline, or something unexpected comes up, and you're all stressed out, and it feels like all the work is out the window. That's why it's so important to consciously curate what you can control, like who you surround yourself with, what you watch, what you listen to. So I'm going to add another podcast to your toolbox, The Dr. John Deloney Show. He has a PhD in counseling and has been sitting with hurting people for 20 years. He shares practical advice for everything from how to connect with people, how to face depression, overcome anxiety, and learn just what it means to be well. But what's really cool about his show is you can even leave a voicemail or send an email, and he'll address your topic or question about mental or emotional help on the show. So no matter what you're going through, the Dr. John Deloney Show is here for you. Listen to the Dr. John Deloney Show wherever you get your podcasts, or follow the link on the website. And now let's welcome Vanessa Van Edwards to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm so excited about this interview because I've been trying to get you on this show for 3.5 years. It's finally the time.
Your timing was perfect. Yeah, you reached out right as I was having my little one, my little girl. So this is great. I'm finally caught up on sleep. It only took 3.5 years of her life to get caught up on sleep.
Oh, I know. I just caught up on sleep the last month, and I'm still kind of like getting a few extra hours here and there to deal with the sleep debt.
I get you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. I absolutely love your books, the way you write them, the way you lay everything out. And I'll end a chapter and feel like, okay, my life is different now. I have things to do and ways to be.
Oh my, that's the greatest compliment. Well, I'm so honored. I think, you know, for any recovering awkward people like me, I'm a recovering awkward person. The tips strike a chord in our heart if you've ever felt like that. So that's, are you a recovering awkward person?
You know, I wouldn't even call it recovering because I am just awkward and proud. However, I aim to be more charismatic with my awkwardness.
Awkwardness is charismatic too. It's funny. Everyone's awkwardness dresses up a different way, right? Like some people, they get awkward and they shut down. Other people get awkward and they overtalk and talk too much. And so if you can own it, it's so much better. So yes, I like it. You're an awkward person and loving it. A proudly awkward person.
So you have a new book called Cues. What inspired you to write this particular book?
You know, it's funny because this is my second book, but it's actually longer in the making. So I came out with my first book, Captivate, 5 years ago, but this book, Cues, I started accidentally researching about 17 years ago, if you can believe it. So 17 years ago, 2005, I started a little folder on my desktop called Curious Cues. Because at the time, it was a really interesting time, like in the news cycle. There was a lot of athletes who were coming out as doping. There were all these lying politicians. I know that never happens, but there was a lot of those at the time. And I noticed this, that there were patterns that it didn't matter if it was an athlete, a politician, or a business leader lying, they tended to show very similar cues for shame and guilt and fear. And at the same time, I also was noticing the opposite, that very charismatic people, again, across industry and talent, so politicians, business leaders, celebrity, athletes, they were showing these strikingly similar cues that were almost signaling to the world that they were charismatic. And I wondered, you know, could I code these? Could I catalog them into a usable language? Because for me, it was a very personal endeavor. It started personal, which was I have a really hard time processing social information. The problem that I have, my anxiety, my social anxiety, comes from misinterpreting cues. I am constantly misinterpreting neutral cues as negative or completely missing negative or positive cues at all. And so I wondered, what if I could study for our social signals, cues of the social signals we send to others? What if I could study these social signals like I study for foreign language? You know, could I create like a glossary of these cues? It was purely personal. And so over the years, I would, you know, clipping these screenshots and saving all these examples, and I started to notice patterns. And the more I started to study these patterns, I started to look at the research. And I thought, the one very specific one, the one in 2005 that sort of kicked off this research, was Lance Armstrong went on Larry King Live and lied about doping. He said, "I've never doped," which now we know Lance Armstrong definitely doped. And after he told this big whopper, I mean, it's just outrageous lie, he did what's called a lip purse. So he mashed his lips together into a hard line. He pressed them down into a hard line. And I remember at the time seeing that cue and going, what was that? What was that? So I started looking in academic journals. I started looking in nonverbal textbooks. And there, sure enough, there was this behavior that when we are trying to withhold something or keep it together or stay in control, hold it back, we will often lip purse. We press our hard lips in this hard line. It's as if our brain's saying, keep it in, keep it together, don't say too much. And it's often a cue of lying, but also can just be a cue of withholding. And I went, what? And so I started to dive more into the research over the next few years. What was research-backed? What was just anecdotal? And slowly started creating this glossary. Little did I know that in 2020, I thought, you know what? There's something here, and I want to share it. And so that was a very long answer, but that was the genesis of how cues came to be.
I love it. When I read your last book, Captivate, it was interesting to me because, well, first of all, I kind of have a bone to pick with you because it's because of you that I'm obsessed with The Bachelor. Yeah. You made an example of like, watch this show and sort of decipher these nonverbal cues. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to go watch The Bachelor. I was like, well, that sounds like a fun way to kind of practice this material. And then I got hooked, and it's my guilty pleasure. I make fun of myself for it all the time on the show. I'm like, I always mention, I read this book back in the day, and they told me to analyze The Bachelor for nonverbal cues, and now I can't stop, and I'm in it for so much more than the cues.
It's so addictive and it's so good. I insist the way that I get the TV from my husband away from Monday Night Football is The Bachelor. So I have to watch it for work. You know, I watch it for sure. I am studying when I'm watching it. So if you need to watch it for work, just blame me. Be like, I'm studying. I have to have the TV tonight. So what's interesting, the funny about The Bachelor is when we think about cues, especially if cues don't come naturally to you. So there are naturally charismatic people who have authentically beautiful cues and we love them for it. Most people though, most charismatic people have cultivated their charisma over time. And that is possible. Charisma is not an innate trait. So then how do we begin to cultivate charisma if it doesn't come naturally to us? The worst thing to do is to learn a cue and then try to immediately apply it with your boss, or like learn a cue and immediately apply it in a high pressure situation. A better way to do it is to begin to train your brain to spot these cues, right? This is a hidden language. It's been spoken all around us. The moment you can start to label and call them out, it kind of warms up your brain. So The Bachelor, as funny as it sounds, it really is a learning tool because you are seeing intense emotions being played out on camera, and they will even zoom in for you. The Bachelor producers, I actually had a Bachelor producer reach out to me after I wrote my last book and say, hey, thank you so much for pitching the show and making people feel not guilty about watching it. And I was like, I don't know if I helped with the guilt factor, but I definitely was happy to support it. And he said, you know, we as producers are always on the lookout for nonverbal cues because we know they're interesting and we zoom in, you know, when we see it. So I want you to think about it as sort of like an anthropological experiment, because as you're watching the show, and it's great to do this with a wingman or wingwoman and say, well, you know, oh, I just saw contempt. I just saw smirk. Or, oh, did you see that fear? Do you see the blocking behavior? That exercise is actually activating a very specific part of your brain. We use a specific part of our brain called the fusiform face area, truly, truly, to identify faces. And that part of our brain is not used to being worked out. Right? From a young age, we're maybe taught how to give a handshake. We're maybe taught to make eye contact if we're lucky, if we had parents who taught us social graces. But we're certainly not taught, is that the sadness microexpression? Do you see those two vertical lines, the eyebrow muscles? Yep, that was definite anger. Like, we're not taught that. And so we have to work out that muscle a little bit. And the best way to do it is through shows like The Bachelor and Bachelorette. And I do win my Bachelor Fantasy League every season. So it's also great to earn a little cash on the side. Why not?
Well, thank you for making me feel less guilty, or at least giving me that excuse, because I have used it hundreds of times in the last few years.
Yay!
What I love about the way you research, though, is I have read a lot of books on just being a better person in general. So a lot of times different things like body language comes up, but yours is specifically laid out. There's just so much scientific evidence behind it. You gather sources from so many different areas. What is your background that allows you to bring such robust research to this area?
I'm constantly sharing with my clients to stop searching in life and instead start aligning. It's true with purpose, with relationships, with higher versions of yourself, and it's also true for hiring. The best way to search is actually just to match with Indeed. Indeed is your one-stop hiring platform with millions of job seekers visiting every month, and their powerful matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. Plus, Indeed lets you schedule interviews, screen applicants, and message candidates all in one place. But Indeed isn't just about speed. They also deliver quality. According to a recent Indeed survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. I love Indeed because it makes hiring so much easier. I'm all about alignment in all areas of my life, and that includes people I hire to work in my business. So I need a hiring partner that makes it simple to find candidates with the right skills. And that's Indeed. And what's really cool is Indeed's matching engine gets smarter the more you use it, learning from your preferences and over 140 million qualifications. Plus, I love that I can do all my hiring in one place. It's just one less thing to keep track of between all of the other things. So join over 3.5 million businesses worldwide who rely on Indeed to find great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/mindlove. Just go to Indeed.com/mindlove right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/mindlove. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I really need to get something off my chest. Being a mom of a 3-year-old boy is really freaking hard, and sometimes it has me questioning my sanity. But then he'll grab my face and call me his sweet little mama. Yes, that's a real thing he says. And it will all melt away until I break his banana. I thought I was done with emotionally abusive relationships, but nope. We all carry around stressors, big and small. And when we keep them all bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. For me, just talking things through is hugely helpful, but it's so hard finding friends and family that are unbiased or non-judgmental. And therapy isn't just about dealing with major trauma, you know? It's about learning healthy coping mechanisms, setting boundaries, becoming the best version of yourself. And BetterHelp makes it super convenient too. Everything's done online so you can fit therapy sessions around your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/mindlove today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/mindlove.
What is your background that allows you to bring such robust research to this area?
Yes, thank you. So yeah, so this book, we just counted actually, it has 130 citations in this, just this book. So I have a deep passion for reading very long, boring academic papers. I don't know where this came from, but I love it. And so my background is actually, I was a international studies major in college, so nothing to do with communication, but I was exceptionally awkward. And I ran into a problem at school. I went to Emory University, which was that slowly my academic skills were outpacing my social skills. And so I would get into group projects, or I would have to start presenting my ideas to the class as I got older. And I could not do it. I could not do it. I had a really hard time. I would beg my professors. I had one professor in particular. I said, I will trade you. I will double the amount of pages I have to write in this paper if I don't have to do it in a group project. And he was like, Vanessa, this project is not about the writing skills. It's about the people skills. And that was a defining moment for me where I began to realize I had to invest a little bit in my people skills. And so my background is simply that I'm a recovering awkward person. And luckily, I love researching dusty academic papers to pull out the nuggets. I think that why that's important is because I had read some communication skills books before me. Like I had read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I read a bunch of books like that, which were helpful to a point. But one thing that's very hard is a lot of those books, like How to Win Friends and Influence People, are written by extroverts. And when you learn people skills from an extrovert, basically they're telling you to pretend to be an extrovert. That's they're trying to teach you. Of course, that's their superpower. So of course, they're trying to teach you how you can be more extroverted. Well, as an ambivert, as a, you know, somewhere in between introvert and extrovert, it's very hard to just fake being an extrovert. It's exhausting. And so I think that what I try to do, and I so appreciate your kindness in reading my work and supporting it, is that I think that we don't have to fake it till you make it to be successful. I don't think that you have to be outgoing or extroverted to be charismatic. And so that particular background, I by the way, no one is more shocked than me that these took off. When I first started this work, I was like, I hope a few dozen people like this tip. I had no idea. And so when Captivate came out, internally, like with my team and my family, I went, you know what? Like, if we can get this book in a couple hundred people's hands, and if it helps them, I'll be so happy. And then it totally exploded, because I think there are so many recovering awkward people. There are so many ambiverts, introverts who don't want to fake being extrovert. There are extroverts who also want to leverage a superpower without feeling inauthentic. And so 60 million people later, I had no idea that there was many awkward people in the world.
Well, and it's so important. It's such communication is one of the key forms of our ability to connect with another human. And connection is also not even just such a key to our success. It's also a key to our happiness in general. And as your book states, nonverbal cues account for 65 to 90% of our communication, which is huge. So we're going to dive in and learn some of these. What are first the different channels of cues?
Yeah. So you mentioned a stat that blew my mind too, right? Like what? When I was in the research and I was trying to figure out, you know, how much of these cues are nonverbal, 65 to 90%. That, first of all, it's a huge range, but it's the majority. Even the lowest is 65%. But most of us show up putting all of our eggs in the verbal basket, right? We think about the words we say, we practice scripts, we practice the perfect answer. That's like showing up with 40% of your ability. And there's so much more happening in delivery. So the four modes of cue communication are first nonverbal, then vocal. And that one's often forgotten. So this is your pace, your cadence, your volume, your pitch, how you deliver your words. Then the third one, of course, is our verbal. So our verbal, our syntax, are the words we choose, the phrases we use all matter. And then last one is imagery. That's the colors we wear, the things behind us in our backgrounds, the personality of our fonts. Yes, even personality has font. And so we're constantly sending these cues, even in email, even in our LinkedIn profile picture, even on the phone. It just, the amount of each mode changes based on where we are.
I took a screenshot of a part of your book and sent it to my husband, and he immediately responded back because it was about LinkedIn photos and how to basically style your photos a little bit better just by your body positioning. And he sends his back to me, and his actually looks very similar to what you recommended. And he goes, did I do good? And I was like, yes, you did good. But if you're if a listener's anything like me, sometimes you hear stuff like, okay, nonverbal, vocal, verbal, imagery, and it sounds like it's overwhelming. But what I love about this research is you can even pick just one thing at a time to start practicing and working on to start to perfect. And so many people are like, oh, I wish I could be that charismatic person in the room. And you lay out a pretty easy way to just get to that place, you know, one little tip at a time. And it's fun to practice as well. But I loved your breakdown of what charisma actually portrays. It was a combination of warmth and confidence. Can you go into a little more detail about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that when I first started on this journey, I thought that charisma was innate, that it was a born trait. You either had it or you didn't. But luckily, this research finds that we can cultivate it. So if we can cultivate it, what is it? And that's actually a hard question, actually. When you ask people, what is charisma? It's a very hard thing to answer. People are always like, you know, it's that feeling that you get. And charisma is one of these very unique traits that you know the moment you see it. When you see a charismatic person, you want to know them, yet we have a really hard time defining it. So what Dr. Susan Fisk found is that very highly charismatic people, people that we want to be around, people that we're drawn to, just as you mentioned, rank really high in these two traits. Pretty much only these two traits, warmth and competence. Why? Humans, when we first meet each other, we're trying to answer two basic questions about the other, about each other. First, can I trust you? Second, can I rely on you? And when we're in an interaction, whether it's a video call or an email or a phone call or in person, we're always trying to answer those two questions to know, are you my person? And can I rely on what you're saying? So the faster that you can answer those questions with warmth and trust cues and then competence and reliance cues, the more people feel like, I can be at ease. And so that sweet spot is so important because we love to be around people who are likable and friendly and trustworthy, but also competent and powerful and capable. The problem is that most of us have an imbalance. Most of us are a little higher in warmth or a little higher in competence, or the worst part is not enough of either, that we undersignal. And so my goal is, okay, if we want to start to slowly adjust our cues, and I love how you said, you know, it's one tiny cue at a time. There are 96 cues in the book. And that's a lot. I want to give you the whole glossary. One or two, it's kind of like a golf swing, you know? These micro changes in your cues can have a huge impact on your game. Same thing. And so highly charismatic people usually have a repertoire of 5 or 6 cues they use, and they are constantly using them to signal high warmth and high competence. The issue is, and I'd be curious for listeners, is, you know, where do you think you fall? Are you higher on the warm side of the scale or higher on the competent side? Or do you hit a balance of both? Do you know for you? Did you take the quiz yet? Do you know where you fall?
I went to take the quiz and then my power shut down because it's a snow day today. So I'm now hooked up to my off-grid setup.
What do you think you are? Do you have a guess of where you think you fall?
For me, I can see my imbalance come out depending on the situation. And so there have been a lot of times where I have... my warmth really shows through and I'm building connection. And then I almost come across as too playful or young. I get that a lot. And so then I started going really hard on the competence side. And when I'm in specific scenarios, I'll be so overly competent that I forget to engage because I'm proving myself, if that makes sense. So for me, I think my imbalance varies on the situation.
And so that flexibility, and you are describing exactly the problem of smart people. So here is what happens to very highly smart people like yourself, is you say, I want to bond with people. I want to connect. I'm not getting the response I want. People think I'm either too young or they're not taking me seriously or they're interrupting me or they don't see me as credible. And that's a problem that happens with people who are too high in warmth. So you say, great, I have competence. So I want to show my competence. So I'm going to hit them with my smarts. Right? I'm going to hit them with the impressive numbers and the impressive stats, the impressive ideas. But the problem is when we dial up too far in competence, this is exactly what Dr. Fisk found, is competence without warmth leads people feeling suspicious. In other words, if we dial up too far on one side or the other, people literally don't believe our competence. And so it's that balance. The reason why it's such a sweet spot, why we crave it so much, is because that perfect balance of cues is what we're looking for.
Yeah, that makes sense. And one of the things that you discuss, though, is that we're not only just portraying our charisma, but we're also decoding cues that are given to us at the same time. So where does that balance come in? How does that kind of work together so that we're not getting overwhelmed of, okay, well, what am I reading? What am I saying?
Yes. Well, the good news is our brain is already really good at this. We actually just have to tap into our intuitive way to do this. The reason for this is because our cues are actually quite contagious. So there's two aspects to cues, right? There's decoding and encoding. Decoding, as you mentioned, spotting the cues that we're seeing and interpreting what they mean. And then encoding, sending the right cues back. Luckily, we are already constantly doing this back and forth. And actually understanding how this loop works is super empowering. And here's a study that completely changed my life and the way that I think about cues is a very simple study. They found that when people spot a cue of social rejection, so a cue of social rejection could be an eye roll, it could be a scoff, it could be a dismissive tone of voice like, yeah, great idea, right? We recognize those as cues of social rejection. They feel terrible, right? Like that's, oh no, it makes you feel awful. What happens is the moment someone spots a cue of social rejection, researchers found that our field of vision increases. Literally, our pupils change so we can take in more of our environment. Why? Well, if we spot a cue of social rejection, that's dangerous for our social survival. So we immediately look around to see, what's my escape route? Is anyone else sending these cues of social rejection? What should I do next? That is, and then by the way, the last piece is you encode, try to make up for that cue of social rejection, right? We might send off more cues of confidence, or if we are not in control of our cues, that shuts us down and we send off cues of anxiety. And this was the problem that was happening to me is I was already in this loop. I was spotting what I thought was a negative cue that was getting in my head. It was making me feel anxious, which made me shut down even more, which got me even more negative cues. The moment that we begin to label the cues, that is how we take control of that cycle. That's how it actually becomes less overwhelming. Overwhelm or too much comes from not understanding the cues being sent to us and not knowing what cues to send back. And so the moment, and research has found that the moment we label a negative cue, it actually deactivates its power. So if we see a fearful expression and we say fear, ah, that's fear, in our own brain, we feel calmer. And so the piece of this is actually, they're all connected, which is wonderful, is every cue that you learn is like learning a new vocab word in a foreign language. It's going to get you farther. It's going to get you more communication. It makes you less confused. It makes you feel like you can have clear intention. And so as we begin to stack them up, that's where this empowerment comes in because we know, ah, yep, no worries. That was a cue of doubt and I'm going to make sure that I reply with confidence. Or, oh, I see some happiness. I want to double up and I want to add warmth. Right? Like that's the magic of what highly charismatic people are doing and we can cultivate it too.
So how much do we have to think about cultural differences when it comes to cues? Because I know that, you know, there's different interactions, different things that people believe are important or just, like I said, cultural differences in the way we communicate. So is that something that comes up a lot and kind of just throws a whole curveball in all of this? Or what do we have to know about that?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So how much do we have to think about cultural differences when it comes to cues?
No, it's actually, it's great because when I was writing cues, it got picked up internationally immediately, which was wonderful because I knew that the book was going to be spread out across cultures. So what I decided to focus on for the book was only the 96 cues that are universal. However, and I always make a note of this in the book, I try to use only the cues that are biological responses. So ways that our human body across genders and cultures and races naturally respond to our environment. the way that we use those cues can be culturally different. So here's an example, which is eye contact is one of the very basic cues, one of the first cues you learn in the book, because we've heard about that one before. So mutual gazing, the moment that we mutually gaze, we both produce oxytocin. Oxytocin is the chemical of connection. It helps us feel connected. Our bodies are very smart. It goes, oh, if I'm close enough to make eye contact with someone and we're sustaining it, we should probably produce the chemical that we need to connect. Yay, right? Like that's a great little loop about how our cues work in this cycle. That is a universal response to human-to-human meeting. We want to make eye contact with people we like, and that produces oxytocin in our body. However, a cultural difference is different cultures have different amounts of appropriate eye contact. So I talk about in the book that in Western cultures, the ideal sweet spot for eye contact and interaction is about 60 to 70% of a conversation. So it's actually not 100%. People often make that mistake. They make 100% eye contact and then it's like very creepy. You know, if you ever had someone like
feels aggressive,
boring, like not ever looking away and you're like, what's going on? That's because we don't like 100% eye contact. We actually like that 60-70%. Whereas in some East Asian cultures, there's less eye contact desired in an ideal conversation. So that's the nice thing is a lot of these cues are actually biological responses, but there's some tweaks on just how much or how many.
That makes sense. And there is so much because I have a baby and it's funny, even he has these nonverbal cues where when he's interested, his are kind of blown up, but I love it. So let's get into some of these cues so that people have action steps that they can take from this episode.
Sure. Love it.
What do you think is the very first thing that's easy to approach for people to begin to work on if they are trying to portray themselves as more charismatic?
Cool. Yes. So by the way, it's great with babies because you do, they're sort of like a cartoon versions of some of these cues, which is wonderfully helpful. So actually, let's do one from a baby. As children, by the way, we have a lot of these natural responses. We're trained out of them, which is so funny. So let's go back to our roots and give some practical examples. So if you have a baby, even a baby without eyebrows, you will notice when they want you or they are interested or they like something, they raise their eyebrows. Even before they have eyebrows, you can see that where they will have eyebrows raises up their forehead. This is a universal charisma cue. The reason for this is because when we want to see more, our eyebrows raise out of the way, so that they're like getting out of the way so we can take in more of our environment. We recognize an eyebrow raise as an intention to communicate or an aha moment or something we like. So a very, very easy, simple one. And I love this on video calls too, as we spend more and more time on video. A great way to just very subtly show engagement is you can eyebrow raise when someone says something interesting, like, oh, that's good. You are literally telling them, I like it. Keep going. Agree. That does two things, right? You're encoding. You're sending a signal of engagement. Wonderful. That makes you look more engaging. And second, you're telling them, good job. So they decode it and feel good. So again, it's like this very, very simple, and it creates a little positive loop. So you can eyebrow raise to show engagement and tension. You can also look for eyebrow raises. If you're with someone and they eyebrow raise, they liked that. You just hit a little good, a little hot button, right? It's like, great. I like that. So an eyebrow raise is a really simple one that you should always be on the lookout for and also be sending.
I love the eyebrow raise. Since I read that, I started doing it to my husband, and he was like, wow, you know, I really feel like you're listening lately. And because, you know, in a relationship, you get caught up, like I'm doing my thing and I'm like, yeah, uh-huh. And I have noticed that, especially when he's busy, I will like kind of get in front of him and I'm like, are you paying attention to me? Like, how do you, there's so many things with relationships where then the way you ask for the attention can be misconstrued and whatever. So I'm like, is now a good time or whatever? And so I've been really just practicing. And what I found though, is that the more that I lean in, the more that I raise my eyebrows, do all the things, it's being mirrored back to me without me even asking. And so it's creating a connection just by the way I am portraying myself. And that's just a little practice with my husband. And so I can imagine how that would be on, say, a potential client call or when you're in sales or when you're coaching.
Right. Yes. And you, this is why I think cues are such a gift is, you know, I have a secret intention with the book, which is not only do I want everyone to feel charismatic, of course, but also I think that this is a beautiful way to interact with the world, right? If you show your warmest, most competent self, if you're using really clear charisma cues. That's a gift to the people you're interacting with. It makes them feel warm and competent. It makes them feel heard and engaged, which then they loop back to you. And that is that mirroring that happens between people. I think it's been disrupted over the last few years. I think the reason we feel so disconnected and so burnt out is because as we interact less and less in person, or even just less and less in general, we have less of these beautiful loops that actually sustain us. Right, that interaction you just described with your husband, when you're leaning in and you're raising, eyebrow raising, and you're head tilting, and you're nodding, and you're engaging in with eye contact and fronting, all the cues that we talk about, that creates this little loop where he does the same thing back to you. And then you both feel more like you belong. You both feel more accepted and wanted for who you are. And that is incredibly important for us as humanity, not to get too big, but I think our social skills are atrophying. I think we're forgetting those innate traits. And so if we have to cultivate them again and learn them more purposefully, they are gifts to everyone. They are gifts to your children and your clients and your partners. If you want people to look forward to phone calls with you, if you want people to feel charged after being with you, talking to you, hanging out with you, reading your email, the way that we do that is we're gifting them these cues that trigger something super positive inside of them. And I know that sounds very, very granola crunchy. I don't mean to get there, but I think that it's really important to be said that these are gifts. When you gift people that you're listening on multiple levels, it is heard. It's so much louder.
Well, I mean, my show's called Mind Love. I am a granola crunchy person at the core. So I love it on all the levels. One thing you had mentioned in your section about the importance of eye contact and gazing was that even just making eye contact with somebody can actually synchronize brain activity. Can you go into more details about that?
Yes. Okay. So here's another example of this loop, of these loops. And by the way, research is coming out every day with more of these, right? So when I started my work in 2005, there was some studies and I was beginning to catalog them and pull them, but every year we're discovering what? Eye contact synchronizes brain activity. What? A handshake can get us on the same brain wave. Like we're learning more and more about these cues. And so this was one that really excited me, which is that again, our bodies are quite smart and it knows, okay, if we're with someone, we want to feel as they feel. It's helpful to know how the other person is thinking, literally to think as they think. And so eye contact is one of the fastest mechanisms to do this. Luckily, this even happens over a webcam. And I was so grateful for this. So during the very start of the pandemic, I had a lot of our students reach out and say, what are we going to do? You know, how are we going to connect over video? And luckily, all of these work over video too. So even making eye contact through a screen, through a webcam, still produces oxytocin, still produces the syncing up of brain waves. Not quite as much, but it still does it. And the other aspect of this for oxytocin is I partnered during the pandemic with Dr. Paul Zak. Dr. Paul Zak is like the celebrity oxytocin researcher. He's just incredible. And he runs a neuroscience lab called Immersion. And what he developed is a software that you put on your smartwatch that measures your skin conductance and heart rate and physiology to see when you are engaged. He's been using this technology to literally test what things in our environment stimulate us, like make us feel engaged. And so I reached out to him and I said, I have this theory that on video calls, we're missing the touch. The first 10 seconds of an interaction, usually we handshake or high five or cheek kiss or hug. Can we make up for that on a video call where there's no touch? And so we thought, I had this hypothesis, what if you say what you would have done or you say the word that you wish you were doing, would it have a physiological response? So we recorded videos of me, two different versions, one of me saying positive non-touch statements like, so nice to see you, happy to be here, great to do this call, right? That normal way, positive way to start a call. And then touch openers. So, oh, I wish we could cheek kiss. I'm sending a virtual hug. Well, we'll have a digital handshake from here, right? Just to see. And it was through the roof. So the physiology, the skin conductance, the engagement when I would say digital fist bump was so much higher, more than double higher than when I said, it's so good to see you. So even just saying some of these words that we wish we could do, even if you're, if social distancing, you can still say, I'm sending a hug from here. Even that triggers a little bit of engagement.
I love that. See, so actionable. All these things, just ways to be a better partner, a better friend, a better salesperson, a better business owner, even things, there's so many examples that you can even like put on your website without you even having to do these interactions. So what is something that we tend to accidentally do that might turn off our charisma?
Oh, yes. Okay. Speaking of websites and marketing materials, this is the biggest accidental mistake. I cue the threatening music right now. This is the biggest accidental mistake I see in LinkedIn profile pictures, websites, marketing materials, and dating profiles, which is the accidental contempt smirk. So contempt is one of the 7 universal microexpressions. It's very simply a one-sided mouth raise. So if you raise up one side of your mouth and a little smirk, that one-sided asymmetrical mouth raise is actually a signal of contempt. It's a signal of scorn or pessimism. Dr. Paul Ekman found that when we do this contempt, this scorn, it makes us feel kind of better than, like superior, kind of makes you look down upon people. It's horrible. If you hold it, you'll actually begin to feel that way. It's a weird internal loop. And that's called the facial feedback hypothesis, that kind of loop that goes between our face and our body. And so if you hold contempt, you will begin to feel contemptuous. I see people, for some reason in society right now, we think of the contempt as like okay, or kind of half happiness, or sort of ambivalent, you know, playing it cool. But actually, it's a very, very negative, pessimistic signal to the world. So please, please go look at your profile pictures, your marketing materials, your website, and make sure you are not accidentally doing the contempt smirk, the one-sided mouth raise. Give it a full smile or neutral, but not half.
It's so funny because as you were saying that, two people I know like that always come up on my feed. It's like their go-to expression. And one of them I've known almost my whole life, and it's always been the go-to expression. Why is it that we can develop a habit where we might not necessarily know that that's what we're putting forward, and that's not what we mean by it, but it can be so misconstrued, and it can even make us feel that way?
I know. So what you were talking about is actually called the nonverbal punctuator. So a punctuator is a nonverbal cue or tick that someone maybe started in their younger years, and then they used it so much it became habit. Now, anecdotally, I think that this signals a lot about someone's personality. So I think that if someone has a nonverbal punctuator, they might have, like, for example, your friend might have actually felt contemptuous at a certain point in her life, and then it became habit. And so that is a really interesting indicator. One, it's a great way to open up questions. But two, if someone is defaulting to a nonverbal tick, you can say, that is their punctuator. The contempt microexpression especially, so if someone uses that all the time, that means it's probably their default, which could be a whole interesting set of questions on its own. But someone who uses contempt a lot with a single person, that is something to dig deeper on. For example, I shared this research in the book, and it really opened my eyes to how nonverbals can be red flags, like, you know, warning signs, the canary in the coal mine, of things that are going wrong. Dr. John Gottman is a marriage and family counselor in Seattle, and he found that when he observed couples on video, he could turn the video to silent and tell you with 93% accuracy if that couple would get divorced. And all he is looking for is contempt. He's watching their faces to see if one member of the couple shows contempt towards the other. Simply seeing contempt on one member of the couple's face, he can tell you with 93% accuracy if that couple will get divorced. So contempt is one of those really interesting ones you always want to watch out for, because it's a signal that something is going wrong, that something needs to be investigated. And that doesn't mean it can't be fixed. But a lot of these cues, they're opportunities, and I do think that there are opportunities to dig deeper, to investigate what's happening behind the lines, to investigate how someone truly and really feels. And that's a really great way to connect, because it allows you to get right to the truth, right to the heart of the matter.
Speaking of getting to the truth, there's so much going on in the world. There's so many people coming on TV, sharing with us what their message is for this moment and what's happening. And honestly, I have major trust issues from the last 2 years. I don't know who to trust. I don't know what to believe. What are some of the cues that are easy to start with if you're trying to spot the bad guy or trying to see if you're being deceived or if somebody is saying something that maybe they don't actually mean?
Yeah, so lie detection is a very complicated science, and there's no Pinocchio's nose. So there is no one cue that definitely signals someone is lying, which is good to know, by the way. If you ever hear someone say, oh, if someone looks up to the left, they're lying, or that is total myth. It does not actually work that way. But some cues that are red flags that can help us dig deeper. So I mentioned a couple, the lip purse. If someone's lip pursing or pressing their line, lips a hard line, you might wonder, what are they holding back? What are they trying to keep together? That's a perfect opportunity to ask more questions. A contempt microexpression, right? It's the perfect time to say, what's going on there? Sudden disengagement, so sudden loss of eye contact. All of a sudden, you're not seeing a lot of that warmth, nonverbal. That's a red flag to go, wait a minute. And those are all danger zone cues. So when we talk about the charisma, warmth, and competence, the last area is danger zone. There's not warmth or competence, that you're not having either of those cues. And that sudden loss of warmth and competence is also something that I want everyone to be on the lookout for, to make sure you know, oh, what's going on around me? How do I dig deeper?
I definitely don't want to learn how to like lie better, but there's times, like I'm thinking of a situation that just happened this week where somebody was offering me a position for something and they were trying to get me to join their team for the specific project. And a number of things that they said turned me off completely. And so I already knew I was going to turn it down because I was like, apparently I have to judge the same people to be a part of this project. Like they were asking me, they had nothing to do with politics. And they're like, what do you think about this? And what do you think about this? And like, you could tell they wanted me to like kind of feed into that. And I was sitting there and I had already started reading your book. And so I was like, what nonverbal cues am I giving off? And like I said, it wasn't so that I could deceive in any way, but I aim to be a warm person. I aim to, regardless of what that person's beliefs are, I don't want to suddenly make them feel shut out. What do you do when you can suddenly feel yourself kind of clenching up or contracting or giving potential nonverbal cues that you don't want to give because you want to stay in your own power, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to cover true emotion. I think that's a good thing, right? Like, it's good that it's hard to cover that. But remember that muting is a cue in itself. And that can be a respectful negative cue. So I wouldn't necessarily want to show them danger zone cues like, how dare you? And I hate that. And I reject you, because that's too much. But if I feel uncomfortable or I want to hide signals, I will just mute. So I will actually allow myself to under emote, because that in itself, people recognize as, oh, something's not aligned here. It's not rude, but it's a subtle way of saying I am under emoting because something isn't working for me here. And so muting is in itself a cue that you can use to protect yourself or subtly signal this isn't working for me.
I think I handled this perfectly then. So I'm really pleased to hear that. Another question I have, though, is just as I grow, the more I am bringing intention to all of my reactions to people. And one of those is with my relationship, for example. Like, I'm so over just the old habits of, you know, accidentally starting these dumb little tiffs over stupid things. And so how I've been handling that is just taking more time to process before I respond and kind of breathe and think through. What is the best way to do that without unintentionally kind of muting or shutting down while processing information before you decide to speak?
I think the pause is really critical, right? We talk about pausing emotionally. I think that pausing nonverbally, verbally, vocally as well. And people respect that too. I'm a very big fan of the breathing pause, even just a, let me think about that for a second. And I will literally say that, like if I am overwhelmed or I'm not sure, I will frequently take a deep breath and say, let me think about that for a second, or give me a second, or I'm thinking, Like that actually shows contemplation. So I think that bringing more pauses into our life, that's better than rushing through something or over signaling or under signaling accidentally. And so the more we can welcome pauses in our own life, but also from the people around us, I think the more we're able to take a minute and kind of gather. If that makes sense.
It does. And see, listeners, we have so much to work with here, and there's still so much that we didn't touch on. So for listeners that want to learn more and connect with you, where's the best place for them to find you and find your new book?
Yes, well, Cues is available wherever books are sold. I also read the Audible if you like the audiobook version. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible. And then if you want to find out more about the research, go to scienceofpeople.com/cues. Or if you want to take our charisma quiz. So if you're curious if you're higher in warmth or competence, you're welcome to take the quiz for free. It's scienceofpeople.com/charisma. Kind of a fun test to take with someone else too. And I'm so, so grateful. Thank you so much for having me and letting me talk about this really fun work.
All the links for this episode will be at mindlove.com/223. So your challenge for this week is to try to incorporate some of these warmth cues into your daily behaviors. And it's not as hard as you think it is. Start with one, make it a habit, notice the effects, and then move on to the next one. And that noticing the effects is one of the most important parts whenever you're working on behavioral change. Because if you're only focused on the thing that you have to change, it can become tedious and sometimes exhausting. But when you start to notice the benefits, the changes in reactions, the changes in results of your connections, the changes in the results of your business deals or your meetings, that's when you begin to seal in the behavior change. We talked about one of the warmth cues in depth, the eyebrow raise. So start with this one. When somebody is telling you a story, to show your interest and your curiosity, raise your eyebrows at key parts of the story. Some of the ones that we didn't talk as in depth about are leaning in when somebody talks to you rather than slouching or leaning back. That whole cool factor that we think is happening when we lean back. Nope, that's not a thing. You just seem cold. Nod sometimes. Be careful not to nod too much, especially women. Apparently women have this bobblehead effect. So nod when it makes sense. Notice your body position. Instead of crossing your arms in front of you, which signals that you're closed to new information or to connection, open up. Even put your palms forward. Think of photos of Jesus where he always has his palms facing upward. And make eye contact, but not creepy eye contact, just regular eye contact. Oxytocin is actually released with eye contact. Man, all you need to do is like breastfeed and look into somebody's eyes and you're pretty much drugged up for the afternoon. Anyways, let me know how it goes. Reach out to me on Instagram at MindLoveMelissa or leave a comment right here on the show notes page at mindlove.com/223. If you'd love to support MindLove, please consider joining MindLove Premium at mindlove.com/premium. There are a lot of benefits. First and foremost, you become my absolute favorite person, like inviting you to my wedding type thing. I've already had a wedding, so you kind of missed the boat, but you're there in spirit. You also get all the backlog of exclusive episodes and some specially designed meditations that I think you will love. So that's mindlove.com/premium. You can also support one of my amazing sponsors. I love them all. Or for a free way to support, share this episode to a friend on social media, take a screenshot, tag MindLove Melissa and MindLove Podcasts, or leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And that's all for today. So thanks for giving your mind a little love today, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning into Your Higher Frequency with MindLove. Head to mindlove.com for a free gift to keep your vibes up until next week. We'll be right back.